is brought to you by Head Start Basketball.
Fall in love with basketball again this February with our partners and friends at Dr. Dish Basketball. Their Dr. Dish shooting machines are undoubtedly the most advanced and user-friendly machines on the market. Be sure to check out their new Dr. Dish facility model with advanced analytics. Learn more at drdishbasketball.com and follow their incredible content at Dr. Dish B-Ball on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, and YouTube. Mention the Hoopheads podcast and save an extra $300 on the Dr. Dish Rebel, All-Star, and CT models. Visit drdishbasketball.com for details. That's a great deal, Hoopheads. Get your Dr. Dish shooting machine today.
Hi, this is Paul O'Connor, Pro Skills Basketball Columbus City Director, and you're listening to the Hoopheads podcast.
If you're looking to improve your coaching, please consider joining the Hoopheads Mentorship Program. We believe that having a mentor is the best way to maximize your potential and become a transformational coach. By matching you up with one of our experienced mentors, you'll develop a one-on-one relationship that will help your coaching, your team, your program, and your mindset. The Hoopheads Mentorship Program delivers mentoring services to basketball coaches at all levels through our team of experienced head coaches. Find out more at hoopheadspod.com or shoot me an email directly, mike@hoopheadspod.com. Follow us on social media at HoopheadsPod on Twitter and Instagram, and be sure to check out the Hoopheads Podcast Network for more great basketball content. Prepare like the pros with the all-new Fast Draw and Fast Scout. Fast Draw has been the number one play diagramming software for coaches for years. You'll quickly see why Fast Model Sports has the most compelling and intuitive basketball software out there. For a limited time, Fast Model is offering Hoopheads listeners 15% off Fast Draw and Fast Scout. Just use the code HHP15 at checkout to grab your discount, and you'll be on your way to more efficient game prep and improved communication with your team. Fast Model also has new coaching content every week on its blog, plus play and drill diagrams on its play bank. Check out the links in the show notes for more. Fast Model Sports is the best in basketball. Hello and welcome to the Hoopheads podcast. It's Mike Klinzing here with my co-host Jason Sunkel, and we are jumping out tonight to talk some
sad NBA, news, Mike.
NBA All-Star Weekend, and some sad personal news for me. Although not really sad, actually, kind of happy because it brings something I did a long, long time ago back into the spotlight. I don't know if you want to break the news.
Tonight,
or you want me to break the news
tonight? Sincere Carey went off a triple double, 42 points.
No, he didn't have the triple double.
Oh, he did.
Malik Jacobs had the triple double. So different guy. So we're talking Kent State men's basketball here for people who aren't familiar.
Welcome to the NBA.
That's right. Welcome to the NBA podcast.
But Mike had a record. Mike had a record that had standard since 1990. He hit 9 threes in a game against the Air Force. Which, by the way, like the fact that it lasted this long, 32. I remember I was talking to Coach Rejas' wife about you still holding that record, and she couldn't believe that a college program, especially in this day and age, no one had hit 9 threes, and she couldn't believe that you hit 9 threes in 1990.
That's a lot of threes, man. Nine is a lot of threes.
I know,
man.
But we were just talking about how in this day and age, like how the game is played compared to how it was played then. It's just amazing that A, you did that in 1990, and B, that someone didn't at least like come close. Like, I don't know how many close calls you had, Mike. But tonight, Sincere Carey hit 10. Kent State tweeted out that he had tied your record. They didn't tweet up that he beat your record, but obviously he did. So, Mike, personal thoughts on losing that record and now only holding one record at Kent State?
Well, first of all, congratulations to Sincere Carey. Congratulations to the Golden Flashes won tonight against Ball State. So they've won, I believe, 8 or 9 games in a row now. So they're on a good streak. So it's always nice to see your alma mater playing well. And Sincere Carey, also a local guy here from Solon. So it's really, if the record has to go down, going down 32 years after I said it is...
Do you know the date, Mike?
I do not know the date. But it was clearly that's a non-conference game. So it was probably, I'm guessing, early in January, if I had to guess, of 1990. But I could be wrong. So that was my junior year. Just... I guess from my standpoint, you think about it, and you and I have talked about it a little bit, but just the fact that you go back to that time and clearly the game was a lot different, and we weren't shooting threes at the same rate that teams are putting threes up. So it's kind of amazing that you look at the three-point transformation that has happened at all levels of the game, and just the sheer number of attempts that guys are shooting. It seems like it was due to be broken at some point. I mean, clearly it was going to go down when you think about just the number of attempts. I look back at, I think I looked at my stats at some point this season. I can't remember why, but looking at it, I think I shot for my career, I think I was right about 40% from three.
I'm looking at your college stats on sportsreference.com right now, because I was trying to figure out your date for you. You shot 39% from behind the arc.
For my career.
For your career.
Okay. So figure if I'm a 39% shooter in today's game, I think I averaged, correct me if I'm wrong, but attempts, I was probably somewhere around five or maybe just a shade under.
Attempts, you were at, well, you were five for the last 2 years of your career. You were at 3.3 for your career.
Oh, that probably, well, okay. So anyway, I guess my point is that if I was playing in today's game as a 40% three-point shooter, I probably would have been putting up 10, 11 threes a game, I'm guessing, just because of the way the game has changed. So it's not surprising to me that it went down. It's fun that I had the record for 32 years. It makes it even more ironic that the longest lasting record that I have is steals in a game. And I'll use the quote that I shared with Elton Alexander, who was the Cleveland Plain Dealer reporter at the time. And anytime anybody talks to me about these two records, it's always the quote that I bring up. And I remember Elton asked me after the game, how'd you get all those steals? And I just said, hey, they just kept passing me the ball. And it's true. I felt like I probably had, I don't know what my career steals number was, but it was probably not much more than 30, 50. I don't know.
I got an answer. It's December 1st, Mike. December 1st was the date you had played against the Air Force.
Okay. All right.
So there you go. Did your steals record happen in the same year?
The steals record, I couldn't tell you. I feel like that was maybe my junior year too, but I could be wrong.
And that was against Bowling Green, you think, or against?
I think the steals record, I remember it being against Central Michigan, but I could be.
Okay, again. Well, I'm going to do some deep diving while this podcast is going on, and I'll get an answer before the end.
If not, I'll be able to find it pretty quickly if I can pull out one of my media guides and figure it out. But anyway, it's funny that eight steals in a game is the only one that's left. So congratulations again to Sincere for hitting 10.
You averaged 0.8 steals per game, Mike.
Okay. So over the course, I probably played 100 and some games. So yeah, I probably
109.
Okay. So I probably had 90 steals total in my career. So I was known as a good defender, but I was not a guy that was going to lead the league in steals by any means. So the fact that I had 8 in one game, I think is kind of an anomaly. And it's funny to me that that's now the only record that I still have that is where I'm at the top. And obviously, I bumped down one in the all-time threes in a game. But hey, when that record lasted for 32 years, kind of amazing and fun, sort of a fun night for me to go back and reflect on that. And like I told you, I was very, very close actually to going down to tonight's game. Haven't been to a game yet this year. And there's only tonight and one more home game, I believe on the 4th against Buffalo. So I was trying to figure out, could I make it to either one? Tonight, no games for anybody, no practices. So we were going to try to make it down. And then I got home and just got caught up in a couple things and it just didn't work out. But man, it would have been fun to be able to be in the building just by happenstance and see the record broken in person. That would have been fun. And unfortunately, it didn't happen. But again, to hold that record for 32 years is, it's been an honor. I think back to that night, and anybody who's played the game knows that every once in a while, you just get that feeling where anything you throw up there is going to go in the basket. And that was certainly the way that I felt in that particular game. Just felt like I was not going to miss anything I put up there. I think I was 9 for 13, and that was the most threes I shot in a game. And if I was playing today, probably that would probably be close to an average of the number of threes I'd probably take in a game today if the game was played back then the way it is now. So anyway, again, congratulations to Sincere. Congratulations to Kent State men's basketball for the win over Ball State, and hopefully they can keep it rolling and take that right into the MAC tournament and maybe get into the NCAA tournament and get a chance to go to the big dance, which we haven't been to in a couple of years. So hopefully we can get back in it this year.
Yeah. All right. So I know we primarily focus on NBA, but we're going to talk about one more other topic point. Juwan Howard. Now, Mike and I have had a lot of text messaging conversation about this. And I know it's been a big thing in the public discourse about what's going on with Juwan Howard. I'll offer my thoughts first, Mike, and then you can say.
Go ahead.
I really think Tom Izzo, I don't know if you watched that video, I think really Tom Izzo summed it up perfectly. You know, people saying, you know, we just need to man up. I think he said, got your tails beat. He used the other word. When we get our tails beat, we just need to understand the fact that there's everyone's at fault in a sense, but Juwan Howard should never put his hands on him. He should have never swung. He should have never gotten as physical slash violent as he did. I personally believe that a 5-game suspension is a slap on the wrist, and I don't think that it's enough. But at the same time, I don't think I don't know that he should have been fired, but I definitely think that this is the second time he's had some kind of altercation. It has to be kind of he's got to be tethered, and if he does anything else that's even close to remotely in out of line, he's gone. They probably told him that. The fact that he's upset that the guy called a timeout because he had all his backups in and down 16 points, Michigan is still standing there pressing with 35 seconds left is absolutely ridiculous. He shouldn't have been pressing. And bottom line, if he didn't want the guy to call a timeout when he has a bunch of backups in who don't play a lot, then he shouldn't have been pressing. And, you know, it is what it is. I think Juwan Howard's the main thing at fault. I do think the Wisconsin coach probably got off a little too light too, because he did seem to seemingly initiate contact when he grabbed Juwan Howard as he was walking by. But I don't know. I don't know that it's suspension, but I think a $10,000 fine is, I mean, that to whatever. I don't know how much the Wisconsin coach is making, but that's probably nothing.
You saw the Wisconsin athletic department, the AD came out and said, we don't consider this to be a Greg Gard fine. We consider this to be a Wisconsin Athletic Department fine, and we'll be paying this on his behalf.
Oh, I did not see that.
Yeah, they came right out and said, basically thumbing their nose, it seemed like, towards
the Big Ten?
Yeah, towards the Big Ten and towards that fine, that they felt like it was unwarranted based on the situation. So I thought that was interesting.
Yeah, that is interesting. I did not see that. Did that come out today?
I don't know where I saw that. I think I read it this morning when I was scrolling through the front page on ESPN, if I'm not mistaken.
Okay. All right. So what are your thoughts on Juwan Howard and like what should have happened to him? And
all right. Well, I think first thing what you have to address is the in-game actions of both coaches, right? That's the first thing that it comes down to. So number one, I think anybody who's coached, you've coached against guys who do some of these things that you might consider to be goofy if you're sitting on the other bench, right? So one, if you're sitting on Wisconsin's bench and you're looking at it, you put your subs in and you're clearly going to win the game and you're up by whatever they were up 15 and there's a minute to go and the other team leaves their starters in and then presses, you're looking at that guy across on the other bench. It doesn't matter if it's Juwan Howard or it's some guy coaching a fifth grade basketball game. You're still looking at that guy and going, what a goofball. Like, why is he doing that, right? Now, whatever. I mean, guys do things like that at all levels of basketball all the time. So you could look at it. Like if I was sitting on that bench, I would look over at Juwan Howard and I might turn to my assistant and be like, what's this guy doing? What an idiot. Why is he pressing our second team or our third team or our guys that are just coming in the game to play for the last minute? I probably wouldn't say anything to Juwan Howard about it, right?
No.
But I would certainly turn to my assistants and be like, what's this guy doing? Okay, so you have that. Then if I'm on the other bench and I'm Michigan, I guess if I was Juwan Howard, I would be like, why is this guy calling a timeout? What an idiot. Why would he call a timeout? He's up by 15. Just let the game play out. But
if you felt that way, then you shouldn't have pressed.
Right. Like I don't see how either guy in either situation has – the right to be upset. You can think the other guy is an idiot for doing that. I mean, you really can. You can look at the other guy and say, why is he pressing with his starters in the last minute of a game where he's up 15 and we got all our backups in. Conversely, if you're Juwan Howard, you can say, why is he calling a timeout up by 15? I think the, in my mind, the Wisconsin coach calling a timeout to organize his backups to break a press is more defensible than Juwan Howard in a game he's down by 15 having his starters in and having them press a bunch of backups. But nonetheless, I've had plenty of things done to and against me as a coach that I don't agree with, and I'll always turn and I'll say something to either if I have an assistant coach on the bench with me or I'm talking to somebody after a game. My response is my daughter, my response is always, I wouldn't have done that. I don't think that was a first-class thing to do, but whatever. I'm not coaching that team. You know what I mean? Like, I can only be concerned with coaching my team. So
you can only be concerned with coaching your players. It's just right. It's the same thing with the teachers. You can only be concerned with teaching your kids, right?
Correct. So I look at both of those guys and I say, I could be mildly upset or not understand why they did the things that they did, but that doesn't give me the right to confront or hit somebody after a game in a layup line. Like, if I'm the Wisconsin coach, I understand maybe he wants to talk to Juwan Howard. Maybe he's trying to explain himself. Maybe he's trying to question Howard. Who knows? I don't know if we'll ever know exactly what was or wasn't said. But he did grab Juwan Howard and try to get him to stop so he could talk to him. We have no idea what that conversation was. I don't think that was the right thing to do. I think if Juwan Howard, if you start talking to him and he's just plowing by you, you just keep on walking. You don't grab the guy and try to explain or try to get his explanation for what he was doing. To me, that's – I don't know if that's a big – I mean, it certainly doesn't warrant the response that Juwan Howard gave, but it's not something that you need to do. I could never imagine in a handshake line grabbing hold of another coach who was walking past me, especially in a situation where clearly I'm guessing it was already fairly tense back and forth. Usually when some things like that happen, sometimes you'll get members of the staff staring back and forth at each other. And I don't know exactly what went on, but I still don't think you grab them. And then from Juwan Howard's standpoint, I mean, you just can't do that. You're a guy who is the head coach. You're a leader
played
of a
in the NBA. Played in the NBA.
I mean, you're a leader of a program. You are a role model for the kids who are on your team, the young men who are on your team. And not only did he create a situation that was A, dangerous, two of his players are right there. I believe two of his players got suspended
and one Wisconsin
as a result
player
of that, and one Wisconsin player. So not only did your actions result in your own suspension, but you also put your student athletes in a position where they, in trying to defend you as the adult, end up receiving a consequence as a result of that. To me, you just can't do that. Now, whether or not that's a fireable offense, whether or not that's a 5-game suspension, whether or not that's he should be out the rest of the year, I don't really know the answer to that. It's not really my place to say. I think you have to understand at least a little bit of what goes on behind the scenes and know more about his program and the way things are and the way things are done behind the scenes in addition to what we see out in public. Clearly, he had the thing with Mark Turgeon, the Maryland coach, last year during the Big Ten tournament. So, as you said, it's now two incidents that he's had. And I've got to believe, just like you said, that he's been told, hey, man, you're on a pretty short leash at this point. If anything else happens, I can't imagine that he would be able to survive that despite being a member of the Fab Five and an alum and an NBA, you know, former NBA player and all the things that he's done. I do think that when you look at the fact that initially he didn't really apologize in the moment, and then he put out a statement. I don't know if that was yesterday.
No,
he put out
a statement that's today. That's a PR statement. That wasn't
I
for
agree.
Him.
It's not his true feelings, because he could have shared his true feelings much earlier than what he did. The sad part is that whoever wrote that, whether it's Juwan Howard getting time to think about it and trying to craft a statement that was going to backpedal away from what he did, or whether it's the PR department or whoever, what he said was 100% correct. And that was that he talks a lot about what it means to be a Michigan man. And I'm assuming that there's more than just words behind that, that there's a certain level of character that he expects from players in his program. And he didn't live up to that. And again, as the leader, not that we can't make mistakes, but putting your hands on other people, whether that's coaches, players, that's cost more than one coach over the course of time their job. And I know Juwan Howard has a lot of goodwill built up at the University of Michigan, and so that probably helped him survive. A lesser guy, a lesser name, probably doesn't survive that incident. But because it's Juwan Howard, I think he gets a little bit of extra grace. And whether or not he's deserving of that, you can probably argue both ways. But man, you just, as a leader of people, you just can't, you can't put yourself in that position. You can't lose your cool. You can't lose your temper, regardless of what was said. You just have to be the bigger person. You have to walk away. And it doesn't seem like he was able to do that. And it's unfortunate. Not something that is good for college basketball. Not something that's good for the coaching profession. We just don't want to see people putting their hands on one another, whether that's coaches, whether that's players, whatever. You have to be able to be a bigger person. You can be unhappy with what the other coach did. You can be unhappy with the other, what the other coach said. But at the end of the day, what are you trying to teach your players? What are you trying to teach your kids as a parent? How are you trying to get your kids to act? You got to be bigger than that. And you got to be, it's easier. It's tougher to walk away, right? It's tougher to swallow your pride, swallow your manhood and walk away sometimes than it is to react in the moment. I mean, that's something that you try to tell your kids. I'm sure you try to tell them at school. You try to tell your kids at home, and it just didn't happen.
Yeah, I think the one thing, I think Izzo said it best, you know, this was the stage for college basketball to take. You know, I know the All-Star game and all that stuff that we're going to get to here in a second. And but like, this is the first weekend without football, and this is what happens. I'll be honest with you, like, I've always thought Izzo's a good coach. I've never been a huge, like, I love Michigan State. But I really think, you know, Izzo said it, you know, he said everything very plainly, very justly, and you know, I respect him for coming out and just being like, this is the way it is. I don't know that Krzyzewski would have come out and said something, because I don't think anyone else has really said anything. I got Izzo the day after. Did you watch the video that I sent you or no?
I did. Yeah, I did. I did.
And do you think Izzo did a really nice job kind of succinctly saying things, or?
I think he did. I think he did a really good job of summarizing just the way that he felt. And I think the way that it could be looked at by the public, and that here we have an opportunity for college basketball to kind of step into the spotlight. And
now it is for the wrong reasons.
Right. Unfortunately, the spotlight was turned in a direction that is not good for the sport. And Juwan Howard has to own that. He's going to sit out the rest of the regular season. I think, look, I guess if it was me, if I was handing down the penalty, I probably would have just suspended him for the remainder of the year. He's out for the postseason. Come back next year with a fresh start and a short leash, and you see where things go from there. And ultimately, to me, it just comes down to, look, regardless of what happened, regardless of what was said, regardless of how upset you were about something that happened in the game, you just can't put your hands on somebody, whether that's, again, as I've said, a coach, a player, a manager, a PR person. I don't care who it is. You just can't put your hands on them. And once you do, you're kind of leaving your employment in somebody else's hands.
Yep. All right, let's turn to the NBA, Mike. I think it's time.
Sounds good.
So I've got two trivia questions to ask you.
Okay.
And they both are in regards to the All-Star game. So
all right.
Here we go. Steph Curry became the second player in an NBA All-Star game to score 50 points. Who is the only other player to do so?
Anthony Davis, 52.
Oh, you knew that.
That was easy. Man. Come on, because they talked about that during the telecast. That was easy. Okay. That was an easy one. Curry, right, I'm feeling good. I'm one for one. Curry, so if I can go now, 2 for 2.
Curry is now the third oldest player to win the MVP in the All-Star game. Who are the only two players that won it older than him?
How old's Curry?
32 years. 33 and almost 34. 33 and 343.
All right. So, man, that's going to be tough. MVP. It's got to be somebody. It's got to be somebody relatively recent. I don't remember the last time LeBron won it. It's not LeBron, is it?
No.
Okay. Kobe?
Nope.
Man. Jordan's only won it three times. I don't think he won it past that age. Did he?
He did.
He did. Okay.
98, right, he won it.
Okay. All right, so I need one more.
And it was more recent than Jordan. I'll give you that
more hint. More recent than Jordan. Okay, that which makes sense. Let's see. Man. I feel like I should probably...
I'll give you one more hint. He was at the All-Star game.
All right, well, that doesn't really help me since 55 of the top 75 players in league history were there. I'll say Carmelo.
Nope.
Man.
He played for the Cavs in the sunset of his career.
Shaq.
There you go.
Shaq. How many All-Star MVPs did Shaq win?
He won it in 2009.
Okay.
That was the year before he was a Cav, right? Or was he a Cav in 2010 or 2008?
He was in Phoenix. Was he in Phoenix that year?
I don't know where he was. 2009.
All right, well, I was one for two. I was one for two. I had nothing on that.
There you go. All right. Okay. So we're going to go through the All-Star game. I don't want to like beat the dead horse here, but let's go through it. Friday night, the Rising Star game. I like the new format. I enjoyed it because they got to play. Everyone got to play at least, you know, a good amount of minutes. There were only seven or eight guys on a team. I thoroughly enjoyed the Rising Star games. It was way better than playing one game and not everyone getting to play a lot of minutes and blah, 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 blah. And maybe I'm partial because two of the Cavs won. They played well. But I really enjoyed the Rising Stars, Jane. I did not watch the celebrity game, Mike. I figured we weren't going to talk about that.
But okay, I got nothing on the celebrity game.
Other than Myles Garrett's dunks looked really nice. But other than that.
I did not see any of the Rising Stars. I was out watching a high school game with my son. But what I didn't understand was, didn't Cade Cunningham have 5 points in the final game?
Yeah, he shouldn't have won the MVP.
I was like, how does a guy who has 5 points in the championship game get the MVP? I didn't understand that.
It was primarily fan voted, first of all. And second of all, it was based on the night as a whole. It was not based on the last game. So I don't know how many points he had in the first game. But, I mean, he had the ball in his hands the most out of everyone in the game.
Okay, I don't know. I just didn't understand it. I'm like, if a guy's going to be the MVP, seems like in an All-Star setting, he probably should have more than 5 points in a championship game.
I think Mobley should have got the All-Star, the game MVP, because he played the defensive end of the floor, the offensive end of the floor. He played really good. Anyways, listen, we're spoiled. We're spoiled with Mobley, Mike. We're spoiled.
Yeah, we are, definitely.
Leading into Saturday night. Now, Mike, the highlight of the night was definitely the skills challenge, right?
That was clearly a highlight. Clearly for us. Although I will say, I don't know if you weren't a Cleveland fan, I don't know if it would have been a highlight of the night.
Well, the dunk contest certainly was not a highlight. And we'll get there in a second.
We'll get to that.
The skills challenge, Cavs won. Once again, Mobley coming through in the clutch. Big time half court shot. I was glooming and dooming when after they hit it with nine and they hit it in 9.9 seconds, I was like, oh boy. And then the Cavs did not have the same strategy that the rookies had. The rookies kind of all just lined up and just started chucking. And the Cavs were like doing it like how we do it in our like half court knockout. And I'm like, oh, this isn't gonna work. And then Mobley hit it. But anyways, that was awesome. I thoroughly enjoyed the skills challenge. I kind of like the format, but I think it drags a little bit. They got to tweak it a little bit. But I like the team format. I think it's better than the individuals.
I don't like the fact that the last competition counts for double the first three or the first two. So the fact that the rookies won the last challenge and got 200 points and then that nudged out.
Well, I thought the tiebreaker was stupid too.
Yeah, to do one shot. Like, I thought they were going to go like 30 seconds of shooting threes or something. I mean, I know they were under a time crunch, and that's why they had the tiebreakers put into place the way they did. But it seems silly that that last competition, the obstacle course, was worth double what the shooting and passing were. That didn't make sense to me. And then the, as you said, the tiebreaker where Garland has to make one shot to advance the Cavs into the finals. And then the half court shooting, although it was cool that Mobley made it, it's still that whole thing was, again, as you said, the rookie shot for 10 seconds and the Cavs shot for 5.5, and that thing was over. So it would have been more fun to maybe have first team to make 5 or something where they were going at it a little bit longer. It would have built some more drama and been more interesting. And yet,
yep,
as you said, to watch Garland and Mobley go out there and just light it up and shoot the ball well. And I just love Mobley. I love the funniest part of the night to me was, and we'll get to this during the dunk contest, but I loved when Mobley was sitting there. It looked like he was eating like a box of Milk Duds or Lemon Heads or something as he was sitting there. And he just kept looking over like, oh my God, like you could just tell that. And tonight, and that night showed it again that Mobley just has that it quality. And I think that's why everybody's so high on him, is he just seems like he's a guy who doesn't get rattled. He's a guy who is cool and calm under pressure. He's a guy who just, he just fits in. And as a kid who's 19 years old or 20 years old, wherever he is now, to be able to do what he did on the stage that he did, and he's going to be a part of All-Star Weekend for a long time. I would imagine beginning next year that there aren't going to be too many All-Star games in the next 10 years where Evan Mobley isn't a part of it.
Yep, I agree. I agree with that. The Cavs have to come back next week and defend their next year and defend the title, right?
You'd think. I mean, I guess unless they have a completely new format. Who knows?
Yeah, we'll see.
Or maybe, right, or maybe you put it in where's the All-Star game next year?
Utah.
Maybe you put it in. Okay, so Utah. Maybe it's the Jazz. Who knows?
Well, the Jazz and the Cavs and then the rookies or something like that.
There you go.
You got to give them a chance to defend the title, I think.
You would think. You would think.
All right. Provided they want to defend the title, but I'm assuming they would want to do that.
You and I both picked the Skills Challenge winner correctly, by the way.
That's about the only thing we picked correctly.
Things went downhill. Well, no, things went downhill from there, but I guess I got 2 out of the 3 right because I had the dunk contest winner right. No, I didn't.
No.
I think I picked Jalen Green.
I hit Obi Toppin.
I had Jalen Green, so I went with him for 3.
Okay. 3-point contest. I think I picked CJ McCollum, and as soon as he started shooting, I was like, well, I lost this one.
Yeah, I had CJ. CJ did not look good.
Well, yeah. So I think the biggest thing to come out of that whole thing, Mike, other than Karl-Anthony Towns, congratulations, was CJ McCollum's comments about the fact that he hasn't talked to Zion and he's been on the team for 2 weeks.
Well, then JJ Redick came out today blasting Zion that he's been basically
eating at the buffet.
No. Saying that basically that he's like, where is he? That the guy's disappeared. That he's had no contact with the team. And
I mean, Redick was on that team last year, right?
Right. That's what I'm saying. So Redick's like, he just is. I forget the exact wording that he used, but
I'm liking my under right now. I'm really, really, really liking my under. I shouldn't say I'm liking it. I'm liking that I am probably going to be somewhat accurate on the under. I'm not liking the fact that we're going to have wasted potential with Zion. But
maybe New Orleans is going to offer him the qualifying offer instead of Zion taking the qualifying offer. Maybe the Pelicans don't even offer him an extension.
Oh, they have to. I mean, you saw the thing that I sent you, right? About how New Orleans pushed out their season ticket holder for next year.
Yes, yes.
And they didn't include a word about Zion on it. Oof.
I don't know what to make of any of it. You don't know how much of it is his actual physical condition, how much of it is, does he just not want to be there? Who knows? At this point, the information that's come from the Pelicans has been so disjointed and, let's face it, incorrect that you have no idea what they're saying. And then from Zion's side, you haven't really heard anything. I haven't heard him interviewed. I haven't heard him put out anything about this is what's happening or this is when I expect to be back or I'm going to have another surgery or nothing. There's been nothing. And when you're left with nothing, then you're left with people like us trying to speculate about what's going to happen. I would say with whatever 20 to 23 games left for teams, it seems pretty unlikely that he's going to be back this year based on the fact that there's been no real news of, hey, he's coming back X, Y, and Z. And even when that news has come out in the past, it's been proven to be completely inaccurate. So, yeah, the Pelicans are a mess.
Yep. All right. So congrats to Karl Anthony Towns.
I don't really. By the way, did you get a feeling that I thought it was a weird interview after he won, him talking about I'm the best big man shooter.
He seemed
kind of. I don't know what the right word is.
Was he subtly jabbing someone?
No. More like full of himself and arrogant for a guy who hasn't really won anything in the league. It came off as being a little bit more. I could have used a little bit more of a humble Karl Anthony Towns.
Yeah, I'm going to give him the benefit of the doubt, though. Mike, he's been through a lot the last year. I mean, losing two family members to COVID.
Yeah, I'll give him that. You're right.
And he had a real bad bout with COVID. And I think, like, I'm giving him the benefit of the doubt. I think with everything he's been through, I mean, maybe this is, I'm being too soft here, but everything he's been through, and it was probably pretty emotional for him. And
yeah, just saying,
although Dirk Nowitzki, I think, wants to have a word with you about the best shooting three, big man of all time. Anyways,
he didn't make a good impression with me. Yeah. It didn't come across well for me. So
okay,
whatever.
The slam dunk contest. I will say, Mike, I'm currently watching. Rex Chapman tweeted out his dunks from the dunk contest, and I think Rex Chapman's dunks were better than some of the dunks we saw. Last night, Mike.
Well, here's the thing. Here's the thing with the dunks is, one, it is really, 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 really hard at this point to come up with something that somebody hasn't done before that is easy to do. Because you're talking about the Jalen Green dunk that he was going to do first, and who knows exactly what he was going to try to do. But
it took like 20 minutes.
when you're reliant upon somebody else to throw you a absolutely perfect pass off the side of the backboard or off the top of the backboard or whatever, that just doesn't work. It's just you can't go through and have 25 attempts and then finally get it to go in and have everybody go, oh, wow, that's incredible, because you've already messed it up 20 times prior to that. And you look at some of the dunks that were converted. Like the one Juan Toscano-Anderson dunk was like a reverse 360 where he sort of backhanded it into the basket. And like, that's an incredible dunk. It's ridiculous. You and I couldn't even begin to think about doing that on a 7-foot rim. And yet we look at it and go, that's a terrible dunk. And Obi Toppin's, okay, he jumps over a guy and goes behind his back or between his legs, whatever he did. That's unbelievable. And that dunk is good enough to win many dunk contests probably in the past.
I even think that dunk he did at the end where he threw it off the back or he threw it off the backboard or whatever.
Yeah, where he tapped the backboard and dunked it.
And they like didn't even like
– That's incredibly hard to do. Now, it didn't have any power. So here's what I'll say. Right after that, of course, I was watching with Cal and Meredith, my son and my daughter, and we were sitting there. We were watching. They're like, this is the worst. This dunk contest is awful. They're like, this is terrible. And I said, all right, well, let's go back. And we ended up right after that, we watched the Dominique versus Jordan dunk contest. Now, granted, it was a shortened version. So if there were any missed dunks or anything, they just eliminated them from the 25 minutes or whatever that we watched. But you look at those dunks, and every single one of those dunks was just completely hammered, especially Dominique's. I mean, Dominique is basically tearing the basket down with his dunks and the amount of power that he had. And then Jordan just brings a flair that none of these guys even come close to having. It was interesting, though. I didn't remember this, but Jordan's winning dunk in that dunk contest was a dunk from the foul line, but he had already dunked from the foul line in an earlier round. So he had already done the exact same dunk and got a 50 the first time and then got a 50 the second time to win that dunk contest. And going back and look at it, and look, I'm the biggest Michael Jordan fan there is, but going back and looking at it objectively, because he already did that dunk.
That would never stand in this day and age, right?
No, if I was Dominique, I would have been. He was upset, and he clearly had every right to be upset because some of Dominique's dunks were just ridiculous and outrageous and just so much power.
Even look, go back at, like, I sent you the Gordon Levine dunk contest. Now that's
incredible.
Is that objectively, other than I know you're gonna have a hard time saying that it's better than the Jordan Dominique one, but objectively, when you look at the amount of dunks and the amount of times they had to go back and forth, and they kept coming up with brand new, like, I shouldn't say brand new, but, you know, like,
it's different right there.
Things to do. It's got to be right there, right?
It's right there. I mean, I think.
And that was 5 years ago.
If you get a chance to go back and watch the Dominique Jordan one, I'd highly recommend you do it, just because those dunks that those two guys were throwing down were incredible. What I like about their dunks is that they didn't have any props. And so at that point, props weren't really a factor. So they weren't jumping over anybody. They weren't having people toss them passes. They weren't, none of that. It was just, they had to go and they had to do something. They were dunks that they could and probably did at various points do in games. And so to me, that makes it, I guess, I don't know if more spectacular is the right word, but it just, it makes it different when, look, Aaron Gordon jumping over the Magic's mascot, that was probably the most incredible physical feat of a dunk that I've ever seen. It was unbelievable, but it's also not something that you're ever going to see a guy do in a game. Whereas everything that Dominique and Jordan did in their dunk contest were things that you could do in a game. And I guess that speaks to what we talked about a second ago, which is the creativity, right? Like, it's almost impossible now to come up with something new or different that you can be guaranteed you're going to put down on your
car, man.
Blake Griffin. So, but you're going to do it the first time. And once a guy misses once, I guess you give a guy one miss. Once you get beyond one miss, everybody in that crowd, everybody in the audience, all the judges in the back of their minds are just, they're groaning. Like, oh, here we go again. And that Jalen Green first attempt just completely sucked the life out of the rest of the dunk contest. From that point on, it was basically, it was a lost cause. And Obi Toppin had some really good dunks. But like I said, you go back and watch the power that Michael and Dominique dunked with, and then you look at the power that was present in the dunks that we saw. That was not a good dunk contest, let's put it that way.
Yeah. All right.
The game needs stars, right?
Yeah,
you need stars.
Okay, yeah.
You need stars. You need stars. And that's the bottom line. If you had LeBron, Giannis, Ja, and Zion in the dunk contest.
I want him in the dunk contest.
Who cares if he can play? All right. What about the other idea that I heard tossed about the internet?
Bring back Horace?
No, just bring back random dudes who are dunkers. Just bring out random dudes who aren't even in the NBA and have them compete against NBA players. So get a team of like three NBA guys and three just
will never agree to that.
Three of the best dunkers in the world. I know they'll never agree to it, but that'd be fun, wouldn't it?
Sure, but they'll never agree to it. So I'm not going to even get that pipe dream.
Okay. All right.
All right. The game itself, I watched – this is probably the first All-Star game I watched the whole game in a long, long time. Steph Curry was amazing. By the way, his segment on All-Star Saturday Night, never again TNT. Please don't do that again.
I took a shower during that time, so I didn't see it. I took a shower in between.
It was a good choice. Anyways, the game, amazing. I enjoyed it. I thoroughly enjoyed it. Once again, the Elam ending to fourth quarter, I think that works. I think it works really well. Mike, I'm going to say it. Don't tell me you got a little bit excited to start the fourth quarter when you saw LeBron, Jared Allen, and Darius Garland on the floor at the same time. Don't tell me you were not a little bit excited to see how it looked. A little bit? Just a little bit?
Do I want LeBron here in a year and a half?
That's not my question. I didn't ask that question. I asked you. Don't tell me. You can't tell me you weren't a little bit excited to see the three of them on the floor at the same time.
I wouldn't say excited. That was not the right term. I would say intrigued. How about that?
Okay. All right.
Will you settle for intrigued?
I'll settle for intrigued.
Okay, that's fair. That's fair.
You know, he's trying to line himself up to work his way out of LA after the season, Mike.
There's no question about that.
He's trying to get out of it. He's trying to get out of there.
Praising Sam Presti as a great GM, who Presti's basically done the exact opposite of what LeBron has ever wanted any GM he's ever played for or worked for to do, right? Just hoard draft picks. Don't bring in any players. Go ahead and lose. LeBron has the value of draft picks to LeBron in his career have been zero. He wants those things traded as fast as possible for old guys that he thinks can help him win in the moment. Look, it's just hilarious that he was clearly the driving force behind bringing Russell Westbrook to Los Angeles. Now, after two-thirds of a season and probably after a third of the season, probably after training camp, he probably realized that, hey, man, this isn't going to work. And now
I love how Russ didn't even show up to this.
Yeah. 70.
Now, did you see my tweet with Jeremy from?
Yeah. That was good.
I said, so Jeremy Liberos, who's on, his staff in Lane Tech. He goes, 75, blah, blah, blah. And I said, Westbrook couldn't make it because he didn't want to sit in a plane so long because he just thought he was going to get hurt for sitting for so long, because that was the joke, running joke before. Listen, the fact that he didn't show up, the fact that Jordan must have had to really literally roll in like 15 minutes before they pulled him out there. He was at the Daytona 500 before that, Mike. You know that, right?
No, I didn't know that.
Oh, he was at the Daytona 500 on Sunday early afternoon. He probably was betting, drinking, and then just flew there. And then said he wanted to play Magic Johnson one-on-one. Where are your shoes at?
The best was that he got announced last. And I know the picture that was circulating of him staring at LeBron that said this is the coldest picture of NBA 75, where I'm sure he wasn't really staring at him. He just caught him looking back and whatever. I doubt Jordan was staring him down. Although I guess you can't put it completely 100% past him.
I saw someone tweet that said Jordan wasn't going to show up, and then the NBA contacted him and he told him, this is what I want you to do. I have to be the last person announced. I have to be standing on the above LeBron, and I have to stare down at him like he's a peon or something like that. Someone, these are my demands, like a ransom letter.
I'm not sure that's all 100% true, but I'm not sure that's 100% false either. there's got to be some shred of truth to that, I think, without question.
Yeah.
So yeah, LeBron is clearly setting himself up for putting pressure on the Lakers. Now look, he moved to LA for a reason. I think that's where he's going to continue to live, but does he want to continue to play at the level that he's playing at and play on a team that has no opportunity to win games and really no path for getting better? I guess I listened to the Low Post today and they were talking about the fact that come this summer, that will open up the opportunity for the Lakers to trade not only their 2027 number one pick, but they could also then include their 2029 number one pick in a potential deal, which could then allow them to do some things that maybe could allow them to improve the roster. But if I'm LeBron, I would be honestly less worried about Russell Westbrook and what the rest of the roster looks like.
More worried about
Anthony Davis and what he is.
Yeah, I agree, Mike. The Anthony Davis thing has to be Westbrook thing is atrocious as it is, but Anthony Davis also has to be on that list of big-time concerns.
Westbrook's short-term, right? I mean, he's going to be gone next year. He's got one more year. You could probably flip him next year because he's an expiring contract. Anthony Davis is going to be there for the long haul. He's the guy that supposedly LeBron was going to pass the torch to, and it doesn't seem like if he does pass that torch, Davis is going to drop it on his foot and get hurt. So I wouldn't want to hitch my horse to the Anthony Davis wagon, and that's why I think LeBron is serving notice to the Lakers that, hey, something's got to be different. Something has to change. And look, you can't say that it was an unmitigated disaster that he went to the Lakers. They won a title, but I don't foresee them being able to do anything to dramatically change the fortunes of this team. Does that mean that LeBron's coming back to Cleveland? Does that mean that the Cavs want him back? Look, if LeBron wanted to come back, the Cavs can say whatever they want. They they'd take him back. But the question is, would you want him? Would I want him? I'm not sure that – I'm not sure he's the guy I'd want to bring in as good as he is. I'm not sure that at his age and with the power that he wields today, I don't know. I think I'd rather roll with the young core and see what we can do.
Yeah, I would. I mean, I would take it back if I don't have to give up anything.
I just worry about what's he do? You know what I mean? Like he has a history of doing things in a certain way when things aren't going the way he wants them to, and I'm not sure that that's a game or business I want to get into.
Okay, I mean it's fair. I would welcome back with open arms, Mike.
Great shot by LeBron. Great shot by LeBron to finish. That was a great ending. I mean, you couldn't script it any better. Back here in Cleveland, LeBron hits the game winner. The 75 greatest players being honored. The greatest current active player on that list hits the game winning shot. Just, I mean, it was poetic. And the Elam ending, as you said, worked really, really well. I thought my favorite part, you know what my favorite part of the end of the game was?
What was that?
Jared Allen.
Oh, he was so happy.
Defending Joel Embiid, who had basically been doing whatever he wanted the entire game. And Jared Allen's like, nope, I'm going to try to guard you. And basically, I don't want to say put the clamps on Embiid, but certainly made it more difficult for Embiid to score down the end in the fourth quarter.
Did you see the picture of Jared Allen dunking with a big smile on his face?
He always has a smile. I said that when he got introduced. I'm like, that guy is the happiest guy in the NBA. He always has that big goofy grin on his face.
Do you know what he was doing when he found out that he got elected to the All-Star team on the plane?
No,
you know what
he
was playing Pokemon on his Nintendo Switch.
All right, there you go.
he's apparently a big video game guy, that Jared Allen. So
he's a happy guy, and that was awesome to see. It was great to see him out on the floor. Who would have guessed that at the end of the game that Jared Allen's going to be the guy that is out on the floor in the last 5 minutes of an All-Star game?
And
nobody saw that coming.
I know I heard it on a podcast. I don't remember what podcast, or maybe I read a tweet. Darius Garland dribbled the ball the most times in the game. Mike.
Garland played well. He missed a couple shots, but he played well.
I mean, he just had the ball in his hands a lot. I mean, he was doing what he does for the Cavs.
You could go through that those two rosters, and we probably should take better notes so we know who to draft and who not to draft next year. Look, I think one of the things that's clear, and I'm not sure that...
Hey, listen, LaMelo Ball showed up, Mike.
That's what I'm about to say. I was about to say that I'm not sure LaMelo necessarily should have been in the game, but if LaMelo is going to be in the game, he's going to be a guy you want on your team year in and year out. He's going to be a guy you want because he's going to do stuff, and he's going to be a fun player to have in the All-Star game. I don't think there's any doubt about that. Conversely... Yeah. I don't think I'm drafting Jimmy Butler in any future All-Star games.
He's terrible in the All-Star game.
Doesn't seem like Jimmy really – he doesn't really care too much. So,
well, I mean, Rudy Gobert was god-awful.
He just didn't play very much. Giannis, you want Giannis on your team.
Middleton was bad.
Middleton
played 21 minutes and he scored 5 points in an All-Star game.
I think, though, the thing is that
he was 1 of 8 from the field.
You want guys who play hard, right? You want guys who at least are going to – semi-compete. So that's why Jared Allen was in at the end, because he competed on defense and guarded Embiid. Giannis competed. Now, competed is not competed like it was game 7 of the NBA Finals, but competed within the context of an All-Star game. Giannis has got to be the number one pick, I think, year in and year out, of the guy you want who's going to play hard. And
I mean, he's going to always be in the voting, though, right? Unless LeBron comes back to the Eastern Conference, I mean, he's going to win the voting in the Eastern Conference. So
yeah, probably, you'd have to think. Yeah. Well, Durant won it this year, right? So,
this is true. That's true. That's true. That's
so,
true.
Let's put it this way. Giannis would be at the very top of my draft list every year that he's
what
in.
What about Fred VanVleet?
Nah, I don't really need any more Fred VanVleet. You look, Jokic almost had a triple-double, but I'm not sure I need Jokic on my team in an All-Star game, just going up and down and guys doing things.
He's the only starter for the team LeBron that was negative, plus or minus, Jokic.
Yeah, and I'm not sure I want Tatum on my team.
Oh, dude, Tatum looked terrible.
Yeah, I'm not sure I want him on my
squad. I mean, he blew a wide-open layup, I'm pretty sure.
DeJounte Murray looked good too.
Him and Allen, the last two guys in, it looked pretty good.
Murray played well. It was a good All-Star game. Fun All-Star game. Great ending. The 75 guys being there, I think, was all fun, and it was cool to see. It's really, you go back and you look at some of those guys, and clearly there's some of them that I remember a lot better than the real old timers.
I'll be completely honest with you, and I couldn't name them. I should have written them down. There were four guys I'd never heard of before on that list.
Yeah, I could see that.
And I'm not going to pull up a list right now.
Paul Arizin.
Yeah, that one's one of them.
Bill Sharman.
No, I heard of Bill Sharman.
Bob Pettit. I hope you heard of Bob Pettit.
Oh yeah, Bob Pettit.
Pistol Pete.
Oh, come on. Pistol Pete Maravich.
I'm just giving you a hard time. Yeah, I don't know. It is what it is.
I'm trying to look here. Dave Bing. I don't know that I've ever heard of that guy.
Detroit Pistons. Dave Bing.
Dave Cowens.
He was an MVP for the Celtics, man, in the 70s.
Yeah. Not a guy I'd ever heard of before.
It's a big, big white guy with red hair. Dave Cowens, good player.
I've heard all those guys. I'm just looking at – there's a list. Someone put them in tiers, so I'm trying to look at the tiers.
Okay.
God, I hate when ads load and then the thing. Oh, Dolph Shays. Yeah, that's a guy I never heard of before.
You never heard of Dolph Shays?
I mean, I've heard of Dolph Lundgren. I don't know. Dolph Shays, no. Everyone else in that tier I've heard of. There was one other guy. I heard all those guys. Oh, God. No, these are going to be all the people I know. I thought there was one more. Nah, it doesn't look like I could find which one it was.
All right, well, that's fine.
So, who are the egregious members of the 75? Wet Westbrook and Dame Lillard?
I mean, I think you have to look at it and say, okay, who do you put in if you take those guys out? I think the most common name that I've heard is McGrady.
Yeah.
Can you make an argument that McGrady, who for the longest time he was known for never being able to get out of the first round, look, from a talent standpoint and a multi-skilled player standpoint, McGrady was fantastic. But you could probably make the same argument about Westbrook, right? I mean, so you're kind of splitting hairs. I guess if you're going to take somebody off, you got to figure out who you put in there. And I don't know. I don't have a huge problem with Westbrook being on there when you consider the fact that he won an MVP, and you consider the fact that, say what you will, he still is putting up triple doubles. And look, the game has kind of moved around him. If he had played in the late 80s, early 90s, that Russell Westbrook is probably a lot more valuable than the Russell Westbrook playing in the year 2022. And that's just the reality of the way the game has changed. So I don't know. I don't have a huge problem with Russ being on it. Like, I think I texted you. I think the only other guy that has won an MVP that was not on the top 75 is Derrick Rose, and just speaks to how devastating that injury was to him and to his career, and the fact that he won an MVP at 22 and then basically was never the same player again after he got hurt.
Got it. All right, really quickly, Mike. So this is obviously the third time they've done the 25th, like an anniversary team, like a big time. So here was the NBA 25th anniversary team. Bob Pettit, Dolph Shays, yep. Paul okay. Arizin, yep. Joel Foulkes.
Okay, he was from, I think he played for Philadelphia. He was like an early, like he was almost a set shooter, I believe, if I'm not mistaken. But he was a big time scorer in the early 50s in the league.
He was a scoring. He was a NBA All Star twice. I'm trying to look and see what teams he. Yeah. Anyways, all right. Bill Russell.
Yep.
George Mikan, Bob Cousy, okay. Bill Sharman, Bob Davies.
Cousy, man, Coos.
Bob Cousy.
Cousy.
I know Bob Cousy. Bill Sharman, okay. Bob Davies, Sam Jones, and who was the coach, Mike?
Who was the coach? Red Auerbach.
There you go. Good job. Were you surprised in the top 15 coaches of all time that Eric Spoelstra was named to that list?
Not really. I mean, I think if you look at what his reputation is in the league today, the fact that he's won multiple titles, the fact that he's now granted he won them with
LeBron.
So But of course, every great coach who's won a lot of titles has won it with superstar players. I mean, you just don't win championships in the NBA without superstar players. And I think the fact that Spoelstra's been able to win with great players and he's been able to continue to be successful with average talent speaks to the kind of coach that he can be. Because you think about like Phil Jackson, okay, the guy was great with great, great players, but what have you been able to take a team with average talent and get more out of them than what maybe another coach might have? And the answer is we don't really know that because we never really saw Phil Jackson in that situation. And so I think with Spoelstra, it's the fact that he's been able to be a coach under different circumstances and still have success. So I think that's why his versatility of working with both superstar players and more average teams, to me, that's probably what put him into that.
Okay. All right. I just thought I'd ask that question. All right. Because I was surprised when I heard that, quite frankly.
Yeah,
but
that's fair. I mean.
All right. So we're going to wrap up the episode here, Mike, with a really quick. We're going to name who we would give the MVP to, who we would give the coach of the year to, and who we would give the defensive player of the year to, and the rookie of the year. So those four sound good. Are there any ones that we don't need to go through any more than that? And
no,
then,
I think that's
and
it.
Then I think next week our original plan was to talk about tiers of pretenders, contenders, and whatnot. But I think that might warrant a bigger discussion than we want to do at this point. So I think we save that for next week. Does that sound good, Mike?
Yeah, it sounds like a plan. We'll dive into all that. Plus, we'll have seen maybe a couple games of these teams in the second half. So maybe it'll give us a little hint as to what direction some of these teams are headed.
Okay, so let's start with Rookie of the Year. One, two, three. Evan Mobley.
Yeah, there we go. I don't think there's any doubt about that. Mobley, from a two-way impact standpoint, I just don't think when you look at what he does on both ends of the floor and you look at the difference in the Cavs' record from last year to this year, and again, Mobley's not the only reason why, but he's a big piece of why the Cavaliers have improved so much. And everybody likes the guy, from fellow players to writers to broadcasters to – it's just everybody thinks that this guy is going to be one of the best players in the league in the years to come. And I just think that because of his two-way impact and because of the fact that he has truly impacted winning for the Cavs, he's a no-brainer. I think maybe if Cade has a good last month and a half of the season, that maybe Cade gets some votes. But I just don't see any way, shape, or form how the Rookie of the Year is Evan Mobley.
Yep. Okay. Defensive Player of the Year. I'm going to surprise you here, Mike.
Okay.
I'm going to go Giannis.
That's not surprising to me because that's exactly who I would have picked.
Well, here's what I thought I would surprise you by saying. Gobert, he'll probably get votes, but I got to go with Giannis. I got to. He's not getting my MVP vote, so he's got to get something. So
okay,
I'm
that's
gonna
fair.
Give,
that's got. Fair.
So I'm gonna give him the defensive player of the year. All right, we're in agreement
Giannis,
so far.
The thing with Giannis is, and I know I heard this with Zach Lowe and Jeff Van Gundy today. We're talking about the fact that the Bucks defense is down to, I think they're like 12th or 13th in the league, something like that. And they were just talking about whether or not that is concerning for Milwaukee's ability to defend their title. But then they said the numbers when basically Giannis is on the floor, they're still a top two or three defense in the league. So figure, unless Coach Bud goes back to his old ways, Giannis will be on the floor for 40 out of the 48 minutes in any meaningful playoff game, which means you're back right up to the second or third best defense. And Giannis just gives you so much versatility on the defensive end of the floor. I think that's what maybe separates him from a Gobert, where Giannis can step out on the floor and guard a perimeter player. You can put him in and have him guard a big. You can have him on the weakest player on the other team and just have him be a menace coming over from the weak side to block shots. He's so long and is just seemingly in every passing lane that it's hard to argue with his versatility. To me, trumps what Gobert is able to do sort of as a one-man defensive system for the Jazz. So I'd rather have the versatility personally.
Okay. All right. Coach of the year. I'm giving it to JB.
it's hard to argue with Bickerstaff as the choice, especially being, I'm sure, slightly biased with us being here in Cleveland. But you look at what the projected win total for the Cavs of, what, 26? We're currently sitting at 35 wins, I think. And let's put it this way. I'm guessing that the Cavs are going to finish with, I don't know, do they get to 50 wins? Maybe. Maybe. If they do, you're basically looking at they're going to double what their win expectancy was heading into the season. Hard to believe that anybody out there on the coaching front is getting more for from their team than what Bickerstaff has been able to get. I think you could make a case that Billy Donovan in Chicago has done a great job of putting together some pieces that people weren't 100% sure how those pieces were going to fit together. And then not only that, but when you lose Lonzo and lose Caruso and then go through the injuries that they've had with LaVine and just the COVID and everything that they've gone through, for him to still have the Bulls right there at the top of the Eastern Conference, I think Billy Donovan has to be mentioned as a pretty strong candidate. I think you look at Monty Williams, what he's continued to do with Phoenix, and you can say, yeah, that's a ready-made team and they're playing really, really well. But nonetheless, you think about the Robert Sarver stuff at the beginning of the season. You think about the potential for the DeAndre Ayton non-extension offer and what that potentially could do to a team. To me, I think Monty Williams has to be in that discussion. I'd say for me, those are the top three. I don't know if you have anybody else in mind that jumps out at you. No,
that makes sense to me. I agree with those, Mike. I agree. I mean, I think Monty Williams, probably if I didn't give it to Bickerstaff, Monty Williams would be the guy I give it to second, quite frankly. Because listen, I think more of a legacy thing than anything, because he's done it over, you know, a set of years, like, and he deserves it. I don't know, Billy Donovan. I mean, I suppose we could give it to him, but I'm not there with that yet. I'm not a believer in the Bulls. I mean, they were expected to do well. That's the other problem I have is, when I think of coach of the year, I think of a coach that has taken a team from the depths of.
Okay, then there's only one other guy. The other guy is Taylor Jenkins from Memphis.
Yeah, right? Yeah.
Because
yeah,
Memphis, yeah. I mean, people thought Memphis was going to be better. They were in the play-in last year. People thought they could be competitive. People thought they could maybe contend for a sixth seed in the West. But nobody saw third in the West. And potentially, they're only, I think, 2.5 games behind Golden State, who's still without Draymond. Now you have Phoenix without CP3. It's not completely and utterly ridiculous that Memphis, who I think, if I'm not mistaken, has the easiest remaining schedule in the Western Conference, that they at least get up to 2. And who knows, maybe you climb all the way. And if Phoenix struggles without Paul, which I don't expect him to completely struggle, but you got to figure they're not going to be as good without Chris Paul for the remainder of the regular season, that who knows. So you got to, I think, throw Taylor Jenkins in there as well, especially if you're going with that criteria of a guy whose team has seemingly overachieved what people thought going into the season.
Okay, sounds good. All right, MVP. Mike, I'm going to give it to Embiid. I've got to give it to Embiid right now. He's taken the Philadelphia, and I know things can change over the last 30 games, 25 games, but, I mean, he's basically carried them, and I know he's had good performances but from other players, but he's been, in my opinion, the best player in the league consistently. Once again, this is the regular season. It's a regular season award. He's been consistently the best player. When we've played every other team, I look at the Eastern Conference. The only other player in the Eastern Conference that I'm afraid of is Giannis. Okay. Miami, I'm not intimidated by anyone on Miami's roster.
Not individually. No, Miami collectively is a team that competes. Yeah, they're very, very good. But you're not worried about Jimmy Butler
in
the same way.
I'm not afraid of anyone in Chicago. Like, DeRozan's really the closest thing to anyone I'm afraid of, and we know his track record when in the crunch time situations. Okay, in meaningful games. And Milwaukee, I already said Giannis. I look at Boston. I'm not afraid of that team. I'm not afraid of Toronto. The Nets, I guess I'm afraid of Durant, but he's not healthy, so I can't give it to him. I'm not afraid of anyone in Charlotte. Trae Young in the playoffs is scary, but am I ultimately worried about him? No. So I just look at the Eastern Conference. I think It's down to Embiid and Giannis. In the Western Conference, it's down to Steph, and he's been kind of falling up. Like, until this 50 point, he's not been playing very good, like the last few weeks. So it's Steph. It's Jokic. I don't think
Ja.
Yeah. I don't think Luka's in that conversation, but I don't think that Jokic can win it as a six seed in the Western Conference. So, because the Western Conference isn't that good, and I know his team's not good, but I just can't see him winning it. And I mean, and once again, you could make the argument looking at LeBron's stat lines and the consistency and all that stuff, but he's never going to win it. His team's in the play-in game, okay? So, I think it's down to Ja, it's down to Jokic in the Western Conference, and maybe Steph too. But I just think it has to be Embiid. So I'm giving my vote to Embiid.
There's only three realistic candidates. I think guys on the fringe are Morant's on the fringe, DeRozan's on the fringe, LeBron's on the fringe, Steph is on the fringe. I think those four guys are probably going to show up on a lot of ballots in slots 4 and 5. I think it comes down to Jokic, Embiid, and Giannis. And if you look at their statistics, every one of them is very, very close when it comes to scoring. They're all within. Jokic, I think, is last on that list at almost 27 a game, and Giannis and Embiid are both right about 29. Jokic, I think, has got the most rebounds, but Embiid and Giannis aren't far behind them. Jokic has the most assists, but again, Giannis is at like 6. Embiid is not quite there. He's a little bit further behind, but I'm not going to argue with you that Embiid has been completely dominant. You did say you don't know what the next 20 game holds for any of these guys, and I think that's the most up in the air in a negative way for Embiid. Not in the standpoint of that he's going to play poorly, but his team's going to have to integrate James Harden, who's a guy who has the ball in his hands a lot and is a guy who is going to take a lot of shots. And you got to think that that's going to cut into Embiid's production, especially if they're going to win. Now, conversely, if Harden comes in and they start losing, that doesn't help Embiid's case, no matter how well he plays statistically. I think when I look at it, if you had, man, it's really, really difficult. I guess of those three guys, I like Embiid the least. Not because I don't like him as a player, but I just don't trust him. And I know it's a regular season award, but I can't help but have the past cloud what I'm looking at right now in the present. Again, like I said, I don't begrudge you the right to vote for Embiid. And certainly Embiid is a very, very worthy MVP candidate. And if he wins it, I completely understand and would be okay with that. Right now, if I had to cast a vote, I think I would vote for Jokic. Only because I think he's ahead of Giannis, because Giannis's team, although they've been kind of in and out of being healthy, and obviously Lopez has been out the whole season, they just haven't really completely hit their stride yet. And that's through no fault of Giannis's. He's been incredible, probably as good, if not better than his two previous MVP seasons. And then you look at Embiid and what he's done and carried the Sixers without Simmons. And probably if you just look at the last 6 to 8 weeks, he's clearly been the best player during that time. He's been on an incredible run of scoring the ball and averaging over 30, and he's just been incredible. So I have no argument against either Embiid or Giannis. Anybody who tells me they want to vote for those two guys, great. I just think when you look at what Jokic does, averaging 26, 14, and 8 as a center, it's basically what he's doing is unprecedented. Just from his all-around game and the fact that he is playing center, but he's also basically the orchestrator of their entire offense, and the fact that he's missing his second-best player and his third-best player, and he has Denver, although they're 6 in the West, and I think Philly is 3rd in the East right now. They're only two games separate them, so it's not like there's this huge gap where Embiid's team is 10 or 15 games better in the standings. The reality is they're only 2 games better in the standings. And I just think that Jokic's all-around game, he's still on track, I think, to set the all-time record for player efficiency. And he's a guy who I just think he'd be a tremendous fun to play with. And he's a guy who impacts winning, and just as Giannis does, just as Embiid does. But by very, very slight, I would give the edge to Jokic. So give me Jokic as my MVP back-to-back for Nikola Jokic.
All right. Sounds good. All right. So next week, Mike, we'll talk about –
We'll dive into more specific stuff.
Yeah, teams, and we'll talk about what's happened. You know, games start back up. I don't think they start till Thursday, right? They start Thursday up.
That's correct. That's correct.
I don't think we have any games tomorrow. First game's Thursday. So
by the time we play, most teams will probably have played like two, maybe three games at the most by the time we record again. So
should we predict the Cavs week? Should we do that really quickly? We don't really do that.
Sure, we can do it quick.
Real quick. So we play Detroit. That's a win.
Yes.
They play Washington. That should be a win.
That's a win.
And then they play the Timberwolves at home on Monday.
That's a win.
That's a win.
I think I said on the last pod that they got to start out. They need to start out 4-0 because the schedule gets a little bit tougher. And I think they need to start out coming out of the break. Detroit, Washington, Minnesota, Charlotte. With Washington, Minnesota, Charlotte all being home games. Then they go to Philly. I think you got to win those first four games.
Okay.
If you win those first four games, that sets you up pretty well for the remainder of the season.
I think if they go 3-1, I'm going to be happy, but I would like them to go 4-0.
I think they should go 4-0. I think you go 4-0, that sets you up pretty well I think that locks you in pretty well to you're going to stay and remain in the top 6.
Okay.
If you can bank those four wins.
Okay. I like what you're thinking. All right.
You ready?
I'm ready. I'm good.
All right, you got some good ones?
Oh, dad jokes. Oh, man. I actually kind of forgot about that. Oh, no.
All right. Okay, so maybe I'll have to go with – I got a bunch of them, so.
Well, just give me a second. But we're already – hold on. You go ahead. You give me yours, and I'll see if I can think of some. I had one. My kid was telling me one today. I got to remember.
What's a kidnapper's favorite shoes?
I don't know.
White Vans.
Oh, no. What did you get? What did the grape do when he got stepped on?
I don't know.
He let out a little wine.
That's a good one.
All right. You want to do one more?
Sure, I'll do one more. All right, I got to make. Okay, I got it. Did you hear about the guy who was trying to lose weight by wearing bread on his head?
No, I didn't, Mike.
It's a low fat diet.
Air used to be free at the gas station. Now it costs $2.50. You want to know why?
Why?
Inflation.
That's a good one.
All right. There we go. We ended on that.
Those are two good ones. Nice. All right. Thanks to everyone for hanging out with us tonight, talking some NBA. We even talked some college hoops tonight, which was a lot of fun. We don't often do that. So thank you for checking that out. If you didn't have a chance to listen to this week's episodes, we had Diana Kutaya from Coaching Peace on Monday. On Friday, we're going to have, I believe, an interview that I did this morning with Dwayne Killings as he is moving through his season at the University at Albany. So talk to Dwayne today for about a half hour on the bus. And then we'll have Joe's Decision from Unleashed Potential, I believe, next Monday, although that one may go up Friday. We'll have to wait and see. Anyway, please check out some of those episodes, and we appreciate you being part of our audience, and we will catch you on our next episode. Thanks.
Thanks for listening to the Hoopheads podcast, presented by Head Start Basketball.